Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Uncommon Energy Podcast. On this week's episode, we've got a lot to talk about. Results from multiple tournaments, kicking things off by looking at the results from the Champions League event that took place over in Japan that has the cards legal in it from the Twilight Masquerade expansion. Really exciting stuff. That will be our NAIC format coming up very soon. At that tournament, there was also a bunch of brand new cards revealed. So we'll be breaking down our reactions and thoughts on some of these brand new cards. And there definitely are some very, very intriguing ones. We will have everyone's favorite segment of the podcast, Guess That Flavor Text. Shout outs to everyone who came up to me at Indy this weekend and said, Guess That Flavor Text was their favorite part of the podcast. You are a real one. And then we will break down the results from the Indianapolis Regional Championships and also look ahead to the Stockholm Regional Championships coming up this weekend, which is where Azul will be this weekend. My name is Chip Ritchie, joined as always by my friend and co-host, Azul GG. What's up, Azul? How are we doing? You looking forward to Stockholm this weekend?
Yeah, I am excited to go to Sweden for the first time, experience that a little bit, going a little bit early, leaving today when people are listening to this tomorrow for where I currently am when we're recording this. So I'll be there. You know, we don't start play till Saturday. I think we basically already know what we're going to play for the tournament as well. So like Thursday, Friday, might just do a little sightseeing around Stockholm, whatever there is to see, check it out in general. I'm so excited for that. Did get top 32 at Indianapolis this last weekend, or coming off a top 32 this weekend with in Indianapolis with Control. Yeah. Ended up going with Control because Caleb and Grant really wanted to play it. They were definitely. It was like a fine play. It's not like a bad play ever, really, to be honest. Wasn't the best play into the tournament meta, I guess, the way things kind of shook out, because the Chi and Pao matchup was definitely a little bit under-tested on our side. It's not a terrible matchup or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I beat all the Chi and Pao's I played against, but it's definitely like a different level when you play against kind of some of the higher level Chi and Pao players, for sure. So there's that. The Diogo matchup is kind of like an auto loss as well for the list that we played. But All Out Blitzel already cooked up an answer for the matchup. So if you're interested in Control, check out All Out Blitzel's Twitter. We kind of just took their list, made a couple changes to it, and then just kind of went with that. Nothing too crazy different from what All Out Blitzel has been cooking and playing. Wigglytuff, the Cloth, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, go check out their Twitter for all the Control updates. But yeah, I already cooked up an answer for the Dialga matchup with the Ditto that can copy the attack of your basic Pokemon in your discard pile. So you basically use the Ditto to copy Mawile, then Mawile can trap a Metang in the active with a Defiance Vest, so you're only taking 20 damage from the Metang because the Mawile is weak to metal, which means it gets one hit KO'd even if you have the Defiance Vest. Or I guess you do get two hit KO'd, but getting two hit KO'd is too fast, so you need to slow.
And this would be better than a second Snorlax because they can boss around Snorlax. They can't boss out of the Mawile lock.
And you need like a ton of stuff in play to actually play the game. So yeah, that is pretty cute. Right? I mean, the answer is that matchup for sure. The champion matchup is still a little bit tough. But even if you check out All Out Blitzel's list that they played at Indianapolis, I keep almost saying Orlando. I don't know why. They had the Sandshrew in there, which we knew about the Sandshrew. Actually, we didn't really like discuss too much about how effective it would be in the Chi and Pao matchup. I didn't like overly push on any of the matchups either. I went into this tournament basically planning to play Control based on what and just kind of go off of what Caleb and Grant wanted to kind of run in the list. So, and they were really confident in the Chi and Pao matchup going into the tournament, less confident leaving the tournament for sure.
But yeah,
I mean, I didn't really push. I kind of just like showed up and
I think I Grant got deck, 4-0'd by Grant Shen in
the tournament. Shen was cooking him. Did get the dub over Kieran. But Grant would tell you himself that he got pretty lucky in that one.
He also beat Nick Moffitt in top eight, but also said he got pretty lucky in that one too.
I mean, that's kind of like, I don't know, the Nick Moffitt outcome did it sound that overly, like, because that's just kind of how the matchup goes. It's not that unrealistic to hit good hits off Miss Fortune Sisters or Erie. Like, I don't know, I handlocked a couple people throughout the weekend by going like turn one Erie Luxray, and they were just, that was it. It was over. And it doesn't feel like that ridiculous to win games that way sometimes in some of the matchups. So that's part of your win percentage for sure. But yeah, deck was cool. Like I said,
Pretty good finish all around from the crew as well. You got top 32. Ryan Antonucci, who you guys tested with for this event, also got top 32, playing your 60.
Yep.
Caleb Gettimer got top 16, and Grant got top 4. I mean, that's a pretty solid finish from one testing group, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's not too bad. I think one thing I always like to kind of keep in check when playing these kind of decks is there is just a... your opponent's going to misplay a lot more against you. Your opponents are going to misplay a lot more against you when you're bringing a deck like this than if you brought like Charizard or something, right? So I think the average results from players like from our group playing a deck like this at a tournament will be inflated a little bit. Whereas like this still might have not been as good of a play.
Be in the meta.
Yeah, the deck isn't as good. Like the results are just inflated. The deck's not actually as good as it places on average most of the time, because you win a lot of games because your opponent just has no idea what's going on, to be honest. And there is a lot that's going on, and this is not like a common deck that people play, so no one has testing against this deck or understands all like the strategies that their deck needs to apply to actually have a chance in the matchup. So it definitely slightly inflated with decks like this, so I always kind of keep that in check. Like, we did have a good result overall, which is great, but yeah, when it's all said and done, you know, the deck is like, it's just another solid deck. Nothing broken, nothing too crazy.
Yeah, cool.
But it was cool to play Control again, for sure. It's been a while. Which actually is something, well, I will say that as well. These kind of, it was like, even when I was, usually when I'm out of top eight contention, I've said this before, I kind of like, you know, I kind of check out a little bit just because like that's my goal for the tournament. But playing Control is just fun. There's so many cool like lines and ways games can go and stuff like that, you know. It's not like sitting down and playing, you know, a couple more games of Charizard, knowing you can't progress in the tournament. Sitting down playing a couple more games of Control is actually pretty enjoyable. So that was something that also came up, or also was made the experience still like more enjoyable, is continuing to play more games with this deck for sure. Even when I was out of top eight contention, still having fun playing Control for sure. My opponents, I don't know, probably less so, but
they probably wish that you were more checked out in the last couple of rounds.
Yeah, probably a little bit.
It's funny, any time you play against Azul in a tournament, for any listener hearing this, you know, going into round 14, 15, if you're already out of top eight contention, you see you're paired against Azul, you just know you're going to have a much easier time than normal because he's checked out, right?
I am a little bit checked out at that point, for sure, yeah.
Also, I didn't mention it at the start, but no camera this week for Azul because he's, like, traveling and doesn't have a ideal setup and stuff, but... should be able to hear him just fine. This is one of the first images that comes up if you Google Azul Garcia Griego, by the way. I thought it was perfect.
Yeah, I won't be home until after Stockholm. I guess one thing we didn't write down to talk about real fast, but we could just bring it up because I don't know, hold him accountable, but registration for the, and it's a little bit less impactful, registration or reserving your slot for the Pokemon Center happened last week, and it was the kind of a mess again. It wasn't as bad.
I think it was worse.
Why can't just, was it? I don't know if it was worse than registration for NAIC. I don't know if I'd call it worse.
I went and tried to sign up for a time slot, and it just never worked.
Yeah,
you had until to, like the wait. Next day. I went and tried the next day, and I couldn't get it to work.
Yeah, so like, I don't know. It'd just be nice for them to get something right with this stuff. I don't know. It's just that's like. Like, come on, just get, like, this is the Pokemon Center, like, time reservation. Like, how are we not getting this right? Like, I want to, like, give them a break, too, but I feel like, I think it's fair for us to, like, hold them accountable on this, where it's, like, they can't do any of them right. Literally zero. It's, like, 0 out of 10 or something at this point. I don't even know. Like, it's a bad, really bad track record. It's just, like, it's just get one on the board. Come on, let's do something with this. Hopefully, going into next season, you know, they pick it up, especially if they're going to be doing their own registration stuff like we think they might be, because they did this for NAIC, but I guess we don't know for sure, but hopefully it's not more of the same of what we've had to experience so far since they've implemented this process. But yeah, we'll wait and see. It just I don't know, it's just like, it's so demoralizing. I don't know, it's kind of like I'm just checked out. It's like I just am no longer in top eight contention. I'm just like, bro, what is happening? Oh, but you were in Indy as well, Chip. You didn't play, you were casting. Oh, actually, you did play a little bit though, didn't you?
I did play a little bit, yeah. On Friday, there was the retro format side event. I talked about it a little bit in the podcast last week. Was very much looking forward to it, and I was having a ton of fun. I started 3-0, was feeling great. And then in round four, I played against someone playing the same deck as me, LBS. I'll just give light details for anyone who, you know, maybe knows about the format. But basically, I opened up with 6 Pokemon in my opening hand and did nothing for multiple turns. Okay. And my opponent got a turn 3 Blastoise and Pidgeot EX, regular Pidgeot, Blastoise EX, which meant they could do whatever they wanted for the entire game, pretty much. And I just never really stood a chance, to be honest. And then in the 5th and final round, there was like 33 people playing in it, which was super cool to see. Love to see that there was so much love for 2006, because it is such a fun format. But normally, there with 33 people, there would be 6 rounds, but they were trying to cut it short because of like time constraints and stuff. So there's only 5 rounds. And in the 5th round, I played against a Mewtric player, and I had a really good game with them. It was like super close back and forth, and that's a really fun matchup to play as well, I think. And it came right down to the wire, but ultimately they did get me right at the very end. But I'm not upset about it. It was definitely a good game. So I went 3-2, which was 8th place when it was all said and done, and they cut to a top 4. Would have been nice to do a little better, but Andrew Mahone did get the win with Dragtrode, which is pretty cool, which is a super sick deck.
Did we talk about this last week? Isn't that like the BDIF in that format now?
No, that's the Dark Tyranitar deck.
Oh, okay, yeah.
He played Dragtrode Rocket Sneasel EX, yeah.
Man, so Mahone did pretty well overall at this in Indianapolis then.
Yeah, Indy was kind to Mahone for sure.
Yeah. He's so focused in that picture.
Dude, anytime I walk by a lot of games when I'm, you know, casting these tournaments, I always try to walk the aisles between rounds when I'm not working or like when I'm not like on camera casting, like just to try to be up to date with what's happening, who's doing well, who's playing something unique and stuff. And he is definitely of like the notable players who I'm like always looking at, by far the most locked into his game anytime he's playing. Like I'll walk by many people's Mahone games, like, and they'll be like looking around and stuff like that. But a lot of times whenever he's sitting on the end of a table, like he'll have his hand wrapped around the edge of the table as well. Like he is just fully locked in. Like whenever it's not his turn, he's watching what his opponent's doing, like not looking to the side at all.
Yeah, staring at their board. Ready for any kind of weird play to jump, like a roller coaster. He's like holding on just in case things get shaken up really bad. And he's like, oh my gosh. No, but yeah, I definitely have noticed that too. Mahone is like one of the most, it's so funny because I feel like it's just like, it's maybe the reason I noticed it the most is just because it's like such a big, feels like such a big shift from just talking to him casually.
Yeah, you know? I agree.
He's very animated and like silly, I guess is maybe a word to put it, like when you're just talking to Mahone casually. But then when he's in a game of Pokemon, he's like locked.
Yeah.
It's like a big 180. But I've definitely noticed that as well.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a lot of fun playing in the 06 side event. I loved getting to do it and talked to a lot of people. It was actually funny. A lot of people came up and asked me how the 06 side event went during the weekend because I had talked about it on the podcast. So, but yeah, I had a good time doing it. Hope to do more of those retro events. Retro Pokemon's a lot of fun. So there's a lot of great resources out there. Jason Klesinski has a blog detailing a ton of details about all the past Pokemon formats. I really recommend checking it out. Also Alex Wilson's site, ptcglegends.com, great resource if you're interested in some old school Pokemon. That's a lot of fun. I didn't play back in 2006. Like I started playing in 2015 or something like that, but I have very much enjoyed learning these old formats. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, well, if you just like the game, the old formats are really always pretty sick. I'm a big fan of playing old formats. I haven't played an old format tournament ever. Definitely something that I would like to play in this one, but I didn't get in until like
I brought a deck for
it. Like
you.
I got in at like I got in at like 4 p.m. and the tournament started at 3 p.m. or something. So otherwise I probably would have played. I don't know that much about the decks and matchups, but it still would have been fun.
Yeah. Yeah, you would have been fine if you just rolled up with Mutrick, to be honest.
Yeah, trying to make it work.
But yeah, and then the only other thing I guess we can mention real quick is that Twilight Masquerade pre-releases do start this weekend. So next week we'll do our set review for the brand new set, most likely. We'll talk about all the new cards coming out and kind of give thoughts about where we feel like they could fit in the meta. We do kind of do that a little bit, I guess, already, because we've seen like some City League results. We'll have the Champions League we'll talk about this week, but yeah, Pokemon was kind enough to send me an ETB and a booster box of the set. So looking forward to checking out the new cards. I'm maybe going to try to go to a pre-release this weekend. If there's one in my area on Sunday, I'll try to check it out Sunday afternoon, see if I can go. I like playing the pre-release formats generally. It's pretty fun, just like casual way to enjoy the game and get the new cards early and stuff like that. So I'm going to try to check out a pre-release this weekend. Anyone listening, if you didn't realize, yeah, the last set didn't come out that long ago, but the pre-releases for Twilight Masquerade are this coming weekend. So feel free to check it out in your area if you've got any available.
Yeah, it's all happening. So, man, I mean, that's what just like... We haven't really had this. I mean, I don't know. The format didn't really change too much set to set. I mean, it would have been nice. Like, it's just nice if things were a little bit more balanced, but we've talked about that quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had the Champions League in Sapporo.
I think so. Sapporo,
yeah. This weekend, I forgot about this one actually happened. There's so many tournaments happening right now.
I forgot. And it wasn't that long ago they had a Champions League as well. I feel like their Champions Leagues are usually pretty spread out.
Yeah, they had one not that long ago. So they had one with, what is it called, Crimson something?
Yeah.
Crimson something released. And they had one with that with Unfair Stamp and Ursaluna. And now they've gotten the Ogre Pond cards as well as the Dragapult with not Twilight Masquerade, but Mask of Change. That's their set. Mask of Change. Now they got Mask of Change. It's another Champions League. And all those cards from both those sets will get in Twilight Masquerade here in a couple weeks. But... Now, when the set initially dropped, Dragapult was dominating. And we talked about that last week. And I was kind of like, ugh, bruh. And it's like, all right, you always got to get a little bit of time for things to shake out, right? We even just saw Dialga win a tournament, right? So things are still shaking out over here in the current format, Temporal Forces format, right? But and things did shake out a little bit, it feels like, so far. Things are changing up a little bit with the Twilight Masquerade format over in Japan. Dragapult dominated the first couple weeks of City Leagues, but people start to figure out how to beat it, and then we see Maridon of all decks takes the whole thing down, right? That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, definitely a bit of a shift, a bit of a surprise. I guess it gets a little bit of help from the Tatsugiri, right? Just a nice pivot, that can help you get out of Ionos at the end of the game.
Mm-hmm. The biggest shift had to be that Dragapult beats Charizard and Charizard beats Maridon, but Dragapult's better than Charizard.
Sure.
So that opens up, it shifts it. It is going from like a tier S format to a tier S format. It kind of feels like, but it's like, okay, if Charizard's just not good anymore, like is that's kind of the question. It's like, okay, if the answer to that is just, yeah, Charizard's bad. It's like, okay, well, what was bad against Charizard that is actually like fine against Dragapult? And I think two of the answers so far that we've seen is Maridon, which won the whole thing, and Lugia as well, with like four Mist Energy to stop the sniping of the Dragapult. And I mean, this Maridon list is just Maridon. There's nothing crazy in this at all.
There really isn't. Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. It's just all about attacking. I mean, there's a lot of energy in here, right? 16 plus 2. I guess it's kind of a bit of a question of like, what does Maridon even look like in this format, really? Because I feel like a lot of people haven't given it its due diligence or spent time with it. It's been written off pretty much since rotation because it lost so much to rotation and Charizard is so good and it has a bad Charizard matchup, right? So it does make you wonder a little bit like, okay, if we spend some time with Maridon on this format, how good could it actually be? And it's pretty good at just being aggressive. And one of the decks you mentioned as well, Lugia, it's got a pretty good Lugia matchup, that is for sure, right?
Yeah. Yeah, which was like the go-to, seems like it was the go-to answer to Dragapult was Lugia. Well, hey, if your deck beats Lugia and or beats Dragapult and the go-to answer to beat Dragapult, that's the better deck. Then that's Maridon, apparently. Yeah, Maridon currently, it did pop up at Sao Paulo a little bit. There was a couple that we saw on stream. One was on the winning end on the last round in day one. And there was one at like 4:05 in the middle of the day at the Sao Paulo Regional Championships on the stream. So some people have been trying to put it together yet, but the Charizard matchup, I think there's too much to deal with. But now that Charizard's kind of been checked, Maridon gets his dub. And then we see Gardevoir actually is the for some reason I thought it was not Gardevoir. I thought Lugia got second for some reason. I thought someone told me Lugia got second, but it was Gardevoir that got second. And it does have a new card in it. In the, what is this card called again? Monkey Dory?
Monkey Dory, you got it.
Yeah, what is the ability on this thing? Because the ability is the important part. I forget what the ability does.
Yeah, this card is pretty good, to be honest. I'm going to pull it up so I can get the exact translation here. But yeah,
it says moves 3 damage counters off your side to their side.
Yes, that is exactly what it does. If it has a darkness energy attached, you may move up to 3 damage counters from one of your Pokemon to one of your opponent's Pokemon. And this was not the only deck that we saw on the stream that was actually utilizing this. There was a Blissey EX deck that was utilizing it pretty well. There was actually like a funny picture where they had, I think, like 3 Monkey Dory in play, which, because it's not limited to once per turn. So like, they can move all the damage off of the Blissey. If there's any damage left on it, they can Sharon's Care, pick it up, you know, move the energies off of it, right, to the next Blissey. It actually seemed really, really cool. Yeah, so effects like the Monkey Dory that move damage counters from your side to your opponent's side of the field, they haven't existed very frequently in the past in the history of the game, but every time they've come up, they've been pretty decent in some capacity. There was the original Banette EX did this, and that deck won Worlds.
What deck was? Oh, is this like an old one? I don't even know.
Yeah, it was like 2007, maybe. Shadow Champ, Shady Move, move a damage counter.
The Shady Move.
This card actually got reprinted as well as the Banette GX, which was much less good, but this actually saw a little bit of play as well. There was that one Worlds where it did okay. There was a couple people that in 2018 had some top 32 finishes with it.
Yeah, quite a few players were like, I don't want to win Worlds, but Banette's cool. So they're all right, locked it in.
And then there was the
favorite card. I mean,
Cresselia level X. There's the Cresselia level X, which this is another one that like in 2009, I think saw like a tiny bit of play. It wasn't amazing, but it does, you know, something similar.
Yeah.
Pretty, these cards have always like created cool options, right? So I'm excited to see what people can do with Monkey Dory.
The Cresselia is still really weird to me in here. No one plays Cresselia in Guardian right now because healing your Pokemon is really bad.
That's true.
But for some reason, it's in this build. I don't know why. I guess you can still build up damage in play. You just have to be careful, right? Where your energy ends up going to build up the damage and so on. But yeah, Guardi's still doing well. It's cool. And he's playing the new A-Spec as well. So there's no... I assume they're choosing to go first now. They're not playing TM Evo. Instead, they're playing the Hyper Aroma. Search your deck for 3 Stage 1 Pokemon. Reveal them and put them into your hand and shuffle your deck. No cape then, though. That does lead to no cape. But the Monkey Dory, I guess, is kind of your... makes up for your damage, right? That's the idea, is Monkey Dory... you build up some damage. You send up Guard EX, throw some energy on it, retreat it. Then Monkey Dory moves that damage to your opponent's active, and then you just hit hard with a Drifloon, and that makes up for the lack of the luxurious cape or the hero's cape, which is neither of those are in here, right? There's no luxurious either, I don't think.
It's definitely
cool to see Guardi still out here.
It's definitely pretty cool too, because like Guardi is a deck that can utilize this really well because they don't have to attach their energy to attack as their attachment for turn, right? So it can afford to have the darkness energy be attachment for turn and then get the energies in play with Psychic Embrace. The Dragapult did still do pretty good.
How many Yurta were in there? I just saw that. How many Yurta were in there?
Oh, 4.
My goodness. What?
That's interesting. I didn't notice that either.
Is it... Is Arvin still just not better? Am I missing something here?
Is this
how do we find a Bravery Charms? Is that supposed to be for Arvin? That's got to be for Arvin, right?
I would think so.
But I feel like if you're, I thought it was like for Iona, for research or something. But then you can't find the evolution card anyways. But then why is there still not this? This list feels just off to me. Something just feels off. Because why would you not play a Team Evo if you're playing for Arvin? But why would you play for Yurida when Arvin exists and you need to find Bravery Charm? It does find Greninja, which I guess is kind of cool. At first, I thought it was like one, and I was like, "Wait, how many Yurida was that though?" And there's no Arvins, but there's four. Yeah, I don't know. That doesn't feel right. But so that's interesting. But I'd be very curious to know if that's actually correct or not. Yeah, I don't know. that feels off to me.
Let me see if I can go just peep the. It's probably gonna take me too long to go like look at the live stream and figure it out, but yeah, that is definitely
that is possible.
That is definitely four funky. Yurida's.
Definitely.
Why are there four Yuridas?
I mean, it finds Greninja. That's actually another thing I was going to mention. Greninja was also in the Maridon deck. I don't know if I don't think we pointed that out, but that was interesting as well. We haven't seen people have talked about it. Some people have done it. Now that you don't have Flaffy on your bench, hey, you got a little bit of extra bench space to work with. Draw power is never bad, right?
Yeah, I guess it makes sense. I mean, what other Radiant Pokemon would you want to play? Serena, maybe. Probably not, though, right?
Yeah, I don't even think, like, against Dragapult, they do spread 60, but I don't think you care about healing that off.
Yeah, it doesn't
probably fine, which add to go.
Any numbers. But speaking of Dragapult, it did still do decently, right? Got a top four, top eight, a few top eights here. So it still had solid representation at the tournament. I did want to say one thing as well. I kind of, I was talking with someone and they pointed this out to me when I was talking about how Dragapult was like dominating City Leagues, and I was asking them what they thought about it, like moving forward into the new format. And they were like, yeah, I don't really put the most stock in the City League results. Like, it's like cool to see what does well in them, but like I don't put the most stock in that because I mean they're just basically League Cups, right? And it's like you wouldn't put the biggest stock in the meta on like what's winning the League Cups all over the place, right?
Yeah, and that's what I've said before too when people like look at City, but it, like for
it's
like
a good frame of reference, but I don't think it's like worth being overreacting towards maybe.
Yeah, I still feel just like kind of like even though like everything in the game is becoming more universal, the Japan format and Japan results and stuff is still so foreign that people are like still excited about the novelty kind of just having this much information about Japan, you know? So yeah. I think it is held up a little bit higher than it probably should be. And of course the Champion League's results, even then I don't like putting as much weight in Champions League results just because I think best of one is a lot more fluky. So, and I think we've seen some suspect decks go really, really far. And I think that is part of the product of, or it's a cause of the product of best of one. So, but yeah, I mean, when we see, I don't know, this much, like how many Dragon Balls are in top 16 here? I think this kind of proves, and I think, yeah. Oh, okay. Maybe not as much. There's more Lugias actually than Dragon Balls. I thought there was a couple more at the bottom there, but yeah, I think Dragon Balls definitely going to be good moving forward. And I think this is like, it's really cool to see the meta already shift so quickly over there in Japan, where it's like Dragapult's dominating these city leagues, and then we get to the major, and it's like people have come up with the answers, and it's really cool. It feels like it's been a while since we've seen a meta feel. I don't even know how to explain it. Like, this is like, I feel like in the past meta shifted and flowed like this a lot more often, so it's cool to see this happening more aggressively with this new set coming out. It just feels like the game's in continues to be in a really good spot.
Yeah, so two of the lists really well, here in the top 16 were kind of more similar to what we had seen from the City League results. A 2-2 Zatu in there for energy acceleration, very thick Dragapult line, obviously, right? But then one of them is pretty interesting with a Lost Zone engine. I think there was one we looked at last week that had the Lost Zone engine in it from a City League victory. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is a pretty interesting way to play it as well. I mean, you do get to play Radiant Charizard, which is pretty cool.
I mean, the other one can play it as well, right? It doesn't stop and...
Yeah, but so, all the other ones want to play Radiant Alakazam, right? It seems like.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. That's fair. Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing with that one is just, like, do you just lose to the mirror because you have a bunch of, like, small HP Pokemon on your bench? But maybe because you have Sableye and Crams, you can more aggressively chase down their Natus. I don't know. I haven't played it all yet, but it feels like the Lawson build would have a...
disadvantage to the non-loss home build.
Sure.
I don't know.
There were quite a few of the Lugias in the top 16, and Lugia gets a pretty big buff this set. The Blood Moon Ursaluna, the Carmine, the Legacy Energy, all those cards are pretty strong in this deck.
Yeah, being able to attack with Luminion and put it back in your deck is like such a big deal that you can do that again now. I feel like we'll see how big of a difference it makes moving forward, because if you are committing the energy to Luminion, that means they can go chase your Archaeops, chase your Chinchino instead of or that makes that play more effective because you have less energy built up in play because you put energy on your Luminion to put it back in the deck. So maybe that's not as good of a play as it seems, but still being able to reduce the possibility of a prize card from your opponent is going to be always really good, right? So, and the hands, you get hands now, which is
huge.
I mean, you can't go wrong with some hands action.
It's pretty interesting. Everyone's having to play like a split of the Minchinos now because the 60 HP one just gets KO'd to Dragapult. That's kind of sad.
That's weird because you do have the four missed. I guess like maybe you're really scared of like Dragapult going first and just like turn two.
Well, you probably also sometimes have to commit your energies from Archaeops to your attackers, right? Like you probably don't always have the luxury of throwing one. Because like even if you want to put one missed energy on a benched Pokemon, you either have to have it in hand or you have to commit one of your two Archaeops to it. So that's two less energy you get to use as an attacking option, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that is fair. That is fair.
We don't have a lot of these other lists.
X.
Yep.
Hey, there are those. Where are the things? There they are, four of them. I said that before in there. The four.
You were right.
Fable Flute. Reveal the top five cards of your opponent's deck and put any number of basic Pokemon you find there onto your opponent's bench. Your opponent shuffles their other cards back into the deck. Man, this is one of those cards where I've been praising the creators of the game a lot in the last couple sets because I'm like, oh, the game feels good. It's moving forward. But was this necessary? I don't think this was necessary. I don't know, but this is the one that feels a little bit bad, to be honest.
Soma was the person, one of the first people at OCIC in 2020 that introduced the world to the Chinchino Mill deck.
Chinchino Mill? You're talking about...
Oh. Magcargo. Wait, this is not... Yeah, this is what... Did people not play this deck with Chinchino? Am I tripping? Am I just misremembering?
No, you're thinking about the Belleville Bryson Man Mill deck, right?
That's this. Yeah, that's what I'm showing here.
Well, this is a sleep lock build with the Mareep.
Oh, okay. There was just different builds of it. Oh, yeah. See, Chinchino. Yeah, Chinchino. This is what I was thinking.
There.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. With Chinchino, yeah. Make do.
Got to get through the deck.
Three Zacians. That's so wild looking back on that. There's three Zacians in this deck.
That is pretty crazy. Pretty unnecessary, right? now we're playing one Rotom Index.
Yeah, I don't even know. I guess it got KO'd and then you put it back down and then the other one wasn't getting KO'd then or something. I don't even remember, to be honest.
You needed to.
Three, though. It's kind of. We have four Quick Ball. I don't know. I guess we can't interact with our prize cards. Is probably
look at how much
thing.
ADP was probably... at this tournament. Holy cow.
Imagine how much more there would have been moving forward. Like, I think it would have just got more and more and more.
What did you play at this event?
Disgusting. Malamar.
Well, you didn't make day Malamar. Two.
No. The list was under-refined, but I think Malamar was a really good play. Dan lost the winning into Nico. Which the Mewtwo matchup was pretty good, but did not have a good... I mean, sometimes Malamar does draw poorly. It does have its brick moments, but... for this term, I actually think we had a pretty good read with the Malamar play. I guess we weren't beating the Fable Flute. Oh, man.
Also had the handy Circulator in here. The Pokemon, it's a Pokemon tool card. If the Pokemon this card is attached to is your active Pokemon and is damaged by an opponent's attack, even if it's knocked out, move an energy attached to the attacking Pokemon to one of your opponent's benched Pokemon.
I wonder what matchup that's for. It's got to be like a specific matchup where they're not KOing. Like, it could even be Rotom, right? You could have Rotom and you're active with it and they don't get the KO, so you just keep moving the energy off it.
Is it good against Dragapult? Stack all their lock their energies on Zatu's and Rotom.
They do 200 damage.
Yeah.
Maybe put it on Mimikyu and Mimikyu moves it off. Is it a Mimikyu strategy, maybe? Could see that. I could see that.
Right.
A couple more Lugias. Couple Maridons. There was three Maridons in top 16. I didn't even realize that. A couple Lugias, a couple Maridons, our ancient box. Yeah, man, I'm really excited for this upcoming format. At first, I was kind of a little bit down on it because I saw how good Dragapult was, but there's the answers. The answers are out there. Just need a little bit of time for people to figure out what seems best or kind of develop the answers a little bit. And Maraudon's back out of nowhere, which is great to see. You love to see. Man, it's just that's like such one of the such the beautiful things about like card games like this is we see Maraudon was really good, then it became pretty meh. It's really bad right now, but we see just the format changes and it's like, oh, my really bad matchup is no longer 25% of the meta. I'm back, you know? So yeah. Excited.
As is tradition at these Champion League tournaments, they did reveal a ton of new cards pretty consistently, what they do, right?
Yep.
And these seem pretty cool. So they released EXs for the Loyal Three. I don't know if you know that that's what these three Pokemon are referred to
as. I've been calling them the Loyal Three, Chip.
You didn't know that. Anyway.
Also, where's the Fezzendipity in the Guardia deck? People have been hyping that up, but I don't see that.
What does it do again? I don't
see that in the Guardia, I guess. It's for if you have a Dark Energy on it, anytime you take damage, flip a coin. If heads, you don't take any damage. And then it's 30 damage plus 30 more damage for each energy on it. But it caps out. It only has like 110 HP, so it caps out pretty quickly.
Sure.
It's not hitting that hard.
So it's probably just not that good then.
I guess, yeah.
But yeah, we've got the Loyal 3 as EX Pokemon. We're getting them in Twilight Masquerade as holos, and they all have kind of cool things going on. And we've got them all as EXs coming out. And then we also have the Petrarunt EX. We've got a tool card. New supporter, new Pokemon. There's a lot of really cool things. Let's start by looking at the Okidogi EX with 250 HP. It is a dark type basic Pokemon, weak to fighting, three retreats. And it's got the first attack for one colorless energy. Attach up to two basic darkness energies from your deck to this Pokemon, then shuffle your deck. If you attached any energy in this way, this Pokemon is now poisoned. And then Crazy Chain for dark, dark, colorless, 130 plus. If this Pokemon is poisoned, this attack does 130 more damage. That's a lot of damage.
Yeah, 260. And also, you probably want to be able to more aggressively poison yourself. So Brute Bonnet comes to mind. Yep. Then you poison your opponent as well, right? So you combo that with the Stadium, Perilous Jungle, plus Radiant Sneasler. Yep. We're looking at like 310 damage, right?
Yep. And then you get this new tool in here. If the Pokemon this card is attached to is poisoned, its attacks deal 40 more damage to your opponent's active Pokemon.
Yeah. So, I don't know. You're one hit KO and stuff. You only have 250 HP, though.
And it's going to be even less because you're going to be taking damage from Perilous Jungle and poison. So, it's effectively going to be 220, right?
Doesn't Perilous Jungle say dark Pokemon don't get...
Oh, you are right. You are right. Yep, you are right.
Oh, pretty good. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, to this card was made for these the whole time. They're sneaky. Ooh, they're sneaky. It's set early, but man, all right. I see how it is.
Yeah, there's dark patch still in the format. That first attack is honestly pretty good, right? You just go second, boop, throw a bunch of stuff on that guy. There's not a lot of stuff that's necessarily going to punish that right away.
That's true, but it is a two-prize beat stick, which means it's bad. That's right. It's just what? Raging Bolt 2.0.
Dude, back to it's the a binder. Little different here because it's a basic Pokemon that KOs the big guys. It's a decent amount of work Roaring to Moon get also there. Does,
Roaring Moon also does that, and it's in my binder right now. I will
because
say
you've got it packed and ready to go for Stockholm. That's why it's in your binder.
Giving a shout out to the Raging Bolts I made too. I played against Adam Reinhardt playing the Raging Bolt. I had a pretty cool list. I hadn't seen it been played like that yet, I don't think. So there's a couple in day two of Indy, which was cool to see.
Raging Bulk, baby.
But yeah, I don't think the Dogi is enough by itself, but let's take a look at the other Loyal 3 cards because they actually add some interesting options as well.
Yeah, for sure. We've got Fezzendipity EX, a 210 HP basic dark type Pokemon, weak to fighting, one retreat. And it's got the ability Table Turner. Once during your turn, if any of your Pokemon were knocked out during your opponent's last turn, you may draw three cards. You may not use more than one Table Turner ability each turn. And then it has the attack Cruel Arrow, 100 damage to one of your opponent's Pokemon.
For three colorless energy. So it's what is it? Oracorio EX? Was that the Pokemon that had this exact same ability, right? And that card was decent. And yeah, I mean, I think this is a good ability. It doesn't only work with other Loyal 3 Pokemon, right? It works with anything. So Pokemon gets knocked out, draw three cards. It's something that can stay on your bench through multiple KOs. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a solid ability. And it'll see play in some deck at some point for sure.
Yeah, the place that Oricorio was the best was in a single prize deck, right? So I feel like that's where this is going to be most useful, is in some single prize attacking deck. Maybe it's like Roaring Moon. Maybe it's like Ancient Box or something. You know, slap this guy on the bench. Drawn three.
You really don't want to end up with a two prizer on your bench. But in certain situations, it wasn't bad. That's where Oricorio fit as well, right? Like, it was just like, you just like, as soon as you hit that tempo where you're ahead as a one prize deck, you're like, as long as I just keep attacking, even if there's a two prize in play, I win. Yeah. That's where Oricorio kind of found its niche for
Helps
sure.
You and play I think Iono and stuff.
Yeah, the Pheasant Dippity will find a similar spot, I think, for sure.
We've got a Monkey Dory EX, 210 HP Dark type, weak to Fighting One, Retreat. Its ability, if this Pokemon is knocked out by damage from an opponent's attack, while you have a Petrarunt EX in play, your opponent takes one less prize card. And its attack, Dirty Headbutt, 190, Dark, Dark, Colorless. This Pokemon can't use Dirty Headbutt during your next turn.
So that's a pretty good ability, obviously, but you do have to have another two prize Pokemon in play that we'll take a look at in a second. Also, the energy requirements for all these attacks is really high. I feel like we might get some other form of dark energy acceleration in the set.
You don't think Dark Patch is enough? Patch,
no. For two dark and a colorless for multiple attackers in a row? No shot. We need Moltres Energy Switchback to supply these attacks, but we don't have that, so I think they're going to give us something, which makes sense for the other Loyal 3 cards as well, right?
Where you just get Darkrai, V-Star in the mix. You can get them back with the V-Star power.
I mean, this deck, I mean, if they don't give it to us, this is definitely just a bad, this is just bad, these are bad cards. Like, these are just more two-prize beat stick.
You're sleeping on the Doge, my guy.
No, I'm not. The Doge needs to stay slept on. Hey, I was right about Raging Bolt, right? I'm also right about Okie Dokie.
You were wrong about AB. You were wrong about Sableye.
Yeah, but they're not fitting the same criteria. Mm-hmm. I got a checklist now. And this, they're checking all the boxes. Until we get some more Dark Energy Acceleration, they've checked all the boxes for sure.
And then we've got Petrarunt EX.
What is this Runt?
Huh?
Is this not, it's not part of the Loyal 3, but how does it fit alongside them?
It is. It's the mythical Pokemon from this generation. Think along the lines of like Mew, Marshadow,
Jirachi.
Yeah. Okay. And it is like the, I don't remember the exact lore. I did play through the DLC. It was kind of ridiculous. If you played the DLC, you know, but, it like creates these mochi, poison binding mochis that, like consume,
of course,
the Pokemon that, or the people in Pokemon that, it's like got a mind control element to it, pretty much.
Oh, so it's kind of an evil yeah, run.
He's an evil little guy for sure. and yeah, Petrarunt EX here. It's 190 HP, basic dark type Pokemon, weak to fighting, one retreats. Chains of control for the ability. Once during your turn, you may switch one of your benched darkness Pokemon, excluding Petrarunt EX, with your active. Your new active is now poisoned. You can't use more than one Chains of Control ability per turn. And then its second attack, Dark, Dark, for 60 times each prize card your opponent has taken.
Oh, I didn't realize it poisoned it. I missed that part of the ability. That actually makes things a little bit more interesting for the Okie Dokie, because
you don't even need the brute on it. Weird. It's a lot less to set up.
Yeah. But then you're only doing 300. You're capping at 300 then with the mochi plus the 260, right?
Yeah, because you're not poisoning your opponent. But then you don't have to play Brute Bonnet and the Tool and the Sneasler and the Stadium, right?
You could just play that supporter card that says you do plus 30 damage, maybe. That gets you to 330. That could be the thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then the attack is decent as well for the end of the game, right? Two darks, 60 for each prize card your opponent's taken. You know, hitting for what? 360 if they've drawn five. That's not bad. Or wait. No, 300 if they've drawn five. Math checks out. It's not plus.
300.
60 times. So It's all right. I guess you could open. You combo that with the Mochi that we're looking at, what, 340? So we can make that work. Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess you can. Oh, no, you can't use this ability to switch itself active, so you can't poison yourself.
Oh, man. Ugh. All right. Makes it a little bit awkward. I guess the attack's not as good then. It's not as good. You can still live for 300, though. If they go to one prize card, though, that's the problem. You have a lot of two prizers in play, theoretically, with this deck, right?
Yeah.
So it might be hard to get your opponent on the odd prize cards. Unless you get, like, you attack with the Monkey Dory at some point, put them on odd, kind of work it from there, I guess. But once again, to like go from attacker to attacker with this deck, there definitely needs to be some other form of darkness and energy acceleration, because I don't think you're going to, the dark patch just isn't going to cut it, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah, they're definitely trying to make some like loyal 3 plus Petrarunt deck be a thing, right? Like they all very obviously work in tandem, or could work in tandem, right?
Dark Pokemon 2 prizer deck.
Yeah, this is like a kid's first deck that they bought, like got one booster box for their birthday, show up to Pokemon League.
They put the whole squad together.
Yeah, pretty sick, honestly. And then, yeah, we read the Binding Mochi. Obviously works with these guys that we just mentioned. But honestly, I think there could be potential outside of this, friggin' Clough and Hisuian Electrode. Like, those are still cards, right? I wonder if this helps any other numbers for those things.
I know. James has been cooking with some Clough recently. James, let us know if you're listening to this. Does the Binding Mochi make a difference? Do we need that plus 40 damage?
That's what we needed. Is that
the missing piece? The missing piece for Clough.
And then two more cards that kind of work in tandem here. We've got the Chorus's Obsession. Search your deck for one stadium and one energy. Reveal them and put them into your hand. Then shuffle your deck. I do have to say, it is cool to see cards like this are being made, where for so long,
like slower.
Yeah. When a card like this, if a card like this came out in the middle of the Sword and Shield era, it would have just been completely disregarded, because it's like, why would you ever play this over Professor's Research? Right. Or if this came out in X and Y, it's like, why would you ever play this over Professor Sycamore? Right.
Yeah.
But now the game, we were talking about this on the broadcast a little bit, like Research, obviously still a legal card. I mean, Hedrick played 4 of them in his deck, but you know, 4 Arvin, and like these setup bit focused cards are, there's room for them to be more of a thing. So I feel like there will be a place for Chorus's Obsession somewhere, right?
Stadiums are just so bad. This one's pretty rough, to be honest, but it may be like a 1/2 of win a Luminion build. So you can like Luminion for Chorus and get your stadium and your energy. But yeah, stadiums are just so bad right now. It's like the big thing.
Yeah, that's fair. It's like, this is the type of thing, like, it could be good in a future format where like there's some better reason. Like, you know, if there was in Path to Peak exists, right? It's another out the path turn one. Or like if your deck is hurt by path, you can go find it, right? So
yeah. Definitely something like that. But yeah, it's a pretty mid card. But I guess it's a mid card that gets bodied by the next card.
And that is the Kyurem here. Basic dragon type Pokemon, 130 HP, non-EX or anything like that. No weakness, no resistance to retreat cost. It's got the ability Anti-Plasma. If your opponent has any card with Chorus in its name in their discard pile, this Pokemon's Tri-Frost attack can be used for 1 colorless energy. And it's Tri-Frost attack for 2 water, 2 metal, and 1 colorless. Says discard all energy from this Pokemon. This attack does 110 damage to 3 of your opponent's Pokemon. So yeah, obviously we just read Chorus's Obsession, but there's another card with Chorus in the format.
Yes, this is for Chorus's experiment in, wait, is that what it's called? That's what it's called, right? Yeah, in Blossom decks. And the only thing, I mean, it's obviously like supposed to be like an aggressive option against Lost Zone decks. And we've seen stuff like this in the past. And I think the only real true like offender has always ever been Promo Giratina, to be honest. Because even when you look at Drapion and Spiritomb and how good they were against Mew VMAX, and you just see how good this could possibly be against Lost Zone decks. When you look back at Spiritomb and Drapion,
and maybe even Paths of the Peak to some extent. I mean, do we really know if they wanted to like kind of kill off Mew? Maybe they were just trying to keep Mew in check, but still have it be a good deck. And when we look at that, and then we think about this Kyurem, I don't know. I want to give more so, instead of being like, oh, they just thought Mew was too good, so they had to print a counter to it. But I feel like they haven't really done that at all that much, besides like the stuff that kind of is good against Mew. But we even see with Mew gone now, people are still playing Spiritomb. I actually, instead of looking at it as like their plan is just, oh, they just, the way Pokemon works, and I see people kind of summarize Pokemon like this sometimes. It's like, oh, when a deck's too good, they just print a counter to it in a couple sets. It's like, I don't actually know if that's true. Maybe they just knew Mew would be too good if they didn't have some kind of checks and balances, but they weren't trying to kill Mew off. They were just trying to be like, we want it to be a good deck, not a broken deck. So I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt to the creators, because I feel like they've been doing such a good job lately and the future looks so bright. Like, I think this is all intentional and they're not trying to just like print cards that kill decks. They're just trying to be like, without these checks and balances, the decks would be too good. And then that's when the game is unfun. So we print the Spiritomb, we print the Drapion, we print the Kyurem, and now the Mew deck is still good, but it's not broken. The Kyurem deck or the Lost Zone decks are still good, but they're not broken. And maybe they just know that Lost Zone decks would be unbalanced without Kyurem existing as like a check and a balance in the format. So I'm gonna give them the benefit of the doubt and say they're not trying to kill Lost Zone decks, but Lost Zone decks would be too good in the format that's coming up if this card didn't exist. And now it will create a more interactive format where Lost Zone decks are good, but do you play the Kyurem? Do you play the Kyurem with the canceling clone so you can get around Manaphy and all that kind of stuff? So I definitely want to see how it plays out, but they don't really, when people bring up the idea of in Pokemon, broken deck, counter to broken deck, a set or two from now, that's not really true, to be honest, if you just look at how the metas actually play out.
Yeah, and I mean, to be honest, how hard does this even really counter Lost Box as well? Because they just can put Manaphy in play.
Yeah, so you have to play Canceling Clone. You have to find the combo. Like, yeah. It's obviously good against it, right? Yeah. And then I did see one person post, it's like, now as Lost Zone, do you have to bench Manaphy at the beginning of every game? And they were kind of talking about that as kind of like a point against closed deck lists more so than anything. But I feel like that's one of like the interesting thing about closed deck lists is knowing when to make that call to get that advantage, or to just, you know, not play a card that's probably going to be dead because you go up against a Lost Zone deck and everyone just benching, slapping down Manaphy turn one, you know? So, yeah, I'm interested to see how it plays out. And so far, like I was saying, it feels like the designers, the creators of the games are just like doing a really good job. And it's like, it feels like these kind of cards, even though people kind of maybe meme about it a little bit or perceive it that way, I don't think these cards are actually meant to kill off archetypes. It's just meant as an option to give yourself an advantage against certain archetypes more so than anything.
Then we do see a new stadium card and a new A-Spec card. Our first A-Spec stadium, which is Neutral Center. Pokemon that don't have a rule box don't take any damage from attacks from their opponent's Pokemon EX and Pokemon V. If this card is in your discard pile, it can't be put into your hand or put back into your deck.
Yeah, so they really don't want you to like Silene Chain this card. Or was Roseanne's backup get back a stadium?
Yeah,
it does, right?
Yeah.
So you get Roseanne's backup for this thing as well. I mean, speaking of how I just said stadiums are bad, this is a really good stadium, but it is an A-Spec. Ooh, I don't know. You could maybe do some tricky stuff in the late game, right? You slap this down, plus Iono, and then maybe even if your opponent plays Vacuum or plays their own stadiums, they can't find the answer to this. You can buy like a turn or two of your opponent not being able to draw prize cards, and that can get you back into the game. Very similar to kind of what is called Black Market, which was also is that Prism Star card?
If it got discarded, it got sent to the Lost Zone.
Yeah, that's right. The Prism Stars did go to the Lost Zone, but yeah, cool, powerful card. I really like what they're doing with A-Specs, to be honest, so far. They're all just cool, powerful cards.
Yeah, definitely.
Interested to see if they print anything specifically, maybe that combos with it as well.
Well, those are the brand new cards that were revealed this weekend. Sorry, go ahead.
There's still quite a few cards that come from this. This is like the next set, right?
So this should be like whatever we're going to have for Worlds, I think, right?
Will it? Because we're supposed to get like, if we're supposed to have like a weird special set for Worlds, will these be in that?
Yeah, I guess that's true. Maybe not.
Yeah, I feel like this would be the set after Worlds, but I could be wrong. Hopefully, I am wrong. To be honest, I would rather have more new stuff than less new stuff for Worlds. But I feel like that's because it's supposed to be some, yeah, it's supposed to be some weird special set before Worlds, but I guess these could be in there. We'll see. But these seem like new main set cards. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know exactly where they'll come out. I guess we'll find out. But yeah, those are the new cards. Definitely looking forward to it. And let's move on to everyone's favorite segment of the podcast. But before we do, we do have to take a moment to thank our fantastic sponsor, Dragon Shield, for supporting us here at the Uncommon Energy Podcast. In case you're not aware, Dragon Shield is a company that makes some of the best tabletop gaming products on the market and card gaming products. We, of course, love them for their sleeves. We use them for every tournament that we play in, and we highly recommend you check them out as well. What did you rock this weekend, Azul?
Rock the Auroras. Also going to be bringing some Auroras stocked up before I left home. So plenty of Auroras for this weekend and this coming up weekend in Stockholm. Going to be rocking those. Yeah, shout out to Dragon Shield as always for, you know, sponsoring the podcast. Check them out. Link will be in the description. I would say if you're on YouTube, there's also a description on Spotify as well, where the link will also be. Use our code UEPOD to get yourself 5% off. Directly support us here on the podcast. And up next, we do have everyone's favorite segment of the podcast, which is Guess That Flavor Text. This turn, it's my
this week turn
to pick a
whoa,
card.
Do you, this whoa, turn, whoa, this whoa, week, whoa, it's whoa. My turn. This turn, what? It is my week.
This week, right. It is my turn to pick a card and read the flavor text of it for Chip to try and guess which Pokemon that card belongs to. We do have 3 lifelines. For each lifeline Chip uses, we'll get 1 less point. If Chip doesn't use any lifelines, we'll get 4 points. And then the lifelines are what set the card is from, what stage the card is, and then read an attack name off the card. Chip, are you ready for this week's flavor text? I believe I'm starting to close the gap a little bit, right? Was it 17 to 24.
Closing the gap, but you'll never catch up. Go ahead, Azul. Let's hear what you got for me.
Well, it's possible. All right. When it takes a defensive posture with its fists guarding its face, it could withstand a bomb blast.
I mean, my first intuition is definitely some fighting type Pokemon. The bombs blast is kind of an interesting inclusion here. I mean, I'm thinking like Hitmonchan, maybe Metatite potentially. I really am pretty heavily leaning towards Hitmonchan right now. Just thinking of like the boxer stance, you know, that it takes, like that's protecting its face. Let me hear you one more time. Read the flavor text.
When it takes a defensive posture with its fists guarding its face.
Yeah.
It could withstand a bomb blast.
Yeah, so what other Pokemon with fists could it be? I mean, maybe Machamp, Machoke, one of those. I'm just really heavily thinking this is Hitmonchan. Let me get some lifeline help here, though. Let's go with what set the card is from. Pretty much always where I start.
It is from... Oh, wait, hold on.
Oh boy.
Give me a second.
If you're on PKM and cards, it tells you the set name on the page of the card.
Breakthrough. I clicked off the page and then I had to
Make
my way back around.
You know, Breakthrough was the very first tournament I went to, was the first tournament, the first weekend that Breakthrough was legal. So I bought a lot of packs from this set because that's the stage of a Pokemon player I was in. I feel like everyone, when they get into the game, goes through like that phase where it's like they just buy way too many booster packs. So I opened up a lot of Breakthrough for sure. I don't know if there's a Hitmonchan in there, though. I can't remember. Is there a... Machamp. I kind of think there is a Machamp. can't quite picture it though. Maybe there isn't. Let me go with what stage the card is.
It is a stage 2.
Okay. Let's have you go ahead and read an attack name. We'll use them all.
Adamantine Press.
Oh my gosh. I know what this is. I've heard this. I feel like I've used this attack before. Adamantine Press. Oh, what has this? I feel like I've used this attack, whatever this is. Maybe in a cube or maybe like on PTCGO. Was this a good card? This can't have been a good card. It was a stage 2. At this time frame, there was no good stage 2s in this time in the game. You know that's true.
I don't remember exactly when this was, but
like Night March, Trevenant. Right after this is when Greninja Break came out. I guess that would be the only stage 2.
That's a stage 2.
That's true. It's a stage 3 actually. True. Adamantine Press, dude. This is like. Is it Machamp? I don't think it's Machamp. There was a Machamp EX in Ancient Origins, so it would be really weird if there was a Machamp right after in the set that came out after. I'm just lost, man. Is it... There's a Tyranitar in Breakpoint, so that's not it. Or Fates Glide. Man, I've just got nothing.
All right, Chip, we're going to need an answer here.
I'm digging deep, digging deep. Fists. I know I've got to say something here. I guess I'll just go with Machamp. I don't think that's right, though. Let's go with it.
It's not Machamp, Chip. It's not.
You got any other hints for me?
Well, I'll give you the other attack if you want that.
Sure.
And we'll see if you get anything off that. The second attack on the card is Spike Lariat. The Pokemon also has spikes.
What type is it? Oh, is it Aggron?
It's not. It's Chestnut, baby. The Chestnut.
Yeah, I've definitely never used that attack.
Yeah, there's a lot of press attacks, though, out there, I think, for sure. Unless you used it in the pre-release, because it was one of the pre-releases. It's a promo. I don't know if it's a pre-release promo.
Yeah, it wasn't a pre-release.
And that's where you saw it.
Oh, so you were looking at this one, not even the...
Yeah, I was like, wait a second.
Azul was looking at this card, and he was like, what set is this card from?
Well, no, I was wondering if it's like, I was like, is it only a promo? Like,
well, hold on. You gave me some false information here.
What do you mean?
The card you were reading was not from Breakthrough. It is an X and Y promo.
Well, no, I switched over to the other artwork once I realized.
So. Oh my gosh. I don't know. There's some fishy stuff going on here.
I don't think so. I think you're reaching here for sure. Not even close.
Dude, Chestnut is such a goofy looking Pokemon, man. What's going on with this guy's head?
Yeah, I don't know. He's like a turtle. He's like a turtle monkey. Like, what
his head
is
looks
it?
Like a big toe.
Kinda.
Just poking out from the shell. I guess that's what a turtle's head kind of looks like, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't know. This is literally the worst Pokemon. One of the worst. Like, worst starter ever. Like, this might be the worst for sure. The fact that this is a starter is
it's tough to. Oh, man. I feel bad to say that because when I played through X and Y, I chose Chespin. Ooh. And I will say, as it evolved.
Chespin's chill.
Yeah, Chespin's cool, man. Chespin is great. As it evolved, I kept getting sadder and sadder.
Dude, Quilladin looks like someone in a. Looks like a person in like a costume.
Quilladin like, looks like a character from Adventure Time.
Yeah. It looks like a human though, in like a costume.
Bro, look at the comment. Wait, because of a what? I think I used this on Guess That Flavor Text, this exact card, and someone commented on it. This looks just like Azul GG. I must have said it looks.
See, maybe
like
that's you. Why I think it looks like a human. Yeah, I guess maybe it does look a little bit like me. All right.
Dude, no way.
Holy cow. So close out the episode here. A couple events happened. We mentioned them a little bit. The Indianapolis Regional Championships, and then there was a special event in Buenos Aires. I guess we could start with Indianapolis. So we're both there. And, I mean, there's some things to talk about here, right? Andrew Hedrick, third regional dub with D'Olga, which is, D'Olga coming out of nowhere. And I heard a couple people mention this to me. I think D'Olga or Hedrick has been saying D'Olga is just like a good deck for a while now. Improving it here with the dub, right?
Yeah, he didn't go to EUIC. He didn't go to Orlando. He had school stuff going on, but he said he'd been playing the deck since before EUIC, thinking it was good.
Mm-hmm. And shows up. First event in the format. Gets it up. Is it the first event for him in the format? It is then, yeah. And gets it up. Yeah, so
those two.
One for one. That's pretty good. That's not bad. And it's definitely a deck that I'm super under practice with. When I did try it out a little bit before this tournament, I think. It did feel decent. Like, I was like, hey, this deck's pretty good. You got a lot of really strong matchups, like stuff like Lost Tina, Arc Tina, are pretty free for the most part. It feels like, I guess for Arc Tina, it kind of depends a little bit more on do they play Maximum Belt and go first. But, and then, like, I think you are like slightly favored against Qian Pao. Or it's close because if Qian Pao goes first, they can snipe your Beldums before you get to use them. But your favorite against Charizard is like my understanding, which is the matchup that I have a question mark about still. But I mean, if that's true, like, I don't know, maybe the format's a little bit more undiscovered than we think. It's hard to say that Charizard still isn't the only like S tier or whatever deck. But when you look at the rest of the top eight, besides just Hedrick winning with D'Olga, there's four Qian Paos or five. Is it five? No, it's four.
Four Qian Pao.
Bubble out. And Lucas Zing was right there at ninth with the same amount of match points as a couple other people in top eight. So that's a lot of Qian Pao.
It is a lot of Qian Pao. And a lot less Charizard than I think what we would have expected. Even when you go down to like the top 32.
Yeah.
Only three Charizard EX in top 32. Like, that is a far cry from what people would have expected going in.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think you look at some of these, the names for sure stand out. Like, you look at all the names in the top eight, I guess, besides, Eddie North here, I think is the one name that stands out. This is probably not a super recognizable name, but you have like Hedrick, three-time regional champion. Grant Shen's been here before. Dean Azeem is a regional champion. Grant Manley's got plenty of top eights. Moffitt, plenty of top eights, especially last season. Mahone's been here before. Ian's been here before. So, a lot of good players, really, really strong players, of course. Like I said, Eddie, I feel like, is this probably his first top eight. I actually know Eddie because he was a local in Indianapolis area, I think. So I've played against him a couple times, actually, when I lived in Indiana. Met him a couple times in Top Cuts of League Cups and stuff. So cool to see Eddie getting that first top eight here at a major. But yeah, a lot of people just choosing not, a lot of really strong players choosing not to bring Charizard, right? That's always going to be a big, piece of the puzzle for what does well. It's just like, what do the best players choose to play? And a lot of people chose to play decks that do have an advantage to some extent against Charizard, right? A lot of teams.
Yeah.
Me and my group brought Pitch Control, which has a good Charizard matchup. So
there were definitely plenty of good players playing Charizard, though. Shouldn't sell that short, right?
Well, I'm not saying there's none of them, but like if it's like half the good players are playing Charizard, half the good players are playing decks that beat Charizard, the players that are playing the good players that are playing the decks that beat Charizard are going to rise to the top, right?
Yeah. There's also quite a few other D'Olga in day two. It was actually the eighth most popular deck, but it was like just behind the sixth most popular deck because it was a tie between Lugia and Tina with 14 people playing them in day two each. And there's 13 people playing D'Olga in day two. Like, so it was more than just Hedrick saying like, yeah, this deck is pretty good.
Well, I think the next two highest finishing. Oh, no. the next one highest finishing, the next highest finishing, I think, was just kind of was Michael Davison, who I think had been talking to Hedrick and stuff, and was playing the exact same 60 as Hedrick, I believe. 60, yeah. Then under that is Jesse Parker, though, who I don't think, you know, talked to Hedrick probably at all before the tournament, but was also playing the Dialga. And man, there are some things that stand out to me in this list here from Jesse. I'm looking at the list now. The Irida,
he actually played the same 60 as Drew Kennett.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Drew running it back with Drew. Drew's been a Dialga believer for a while as well. And I had top 32 in Orlando, I want to say, for sure. I did make day two at UIC, so it's like three day twos in a row for Drew with the Dialga. Yeah. This list has a little bit more going on. A little bit more going on, for sure.
Yeah, that Hedrick's is one thing is about Hedrick's list I really like, actually. It's a very streamlined list, right? There's like not a lot of going on. There's like definitely merit to that, right?
Yeah, I think that's just how you want it to look. Like when I was testing out the deck before this tournament, like I was just like, I started cutting everything down to just being as straightforward as possible. It's like the deck, like the power is, this is one of the decks, like you can compare it to like Chi and Pao, I guess, in a little bit like this. Like the power is there, the issue is the consistency, right? So usually when that is happening, it's like if you have to tech out the deck to make it beat enough matchups in the current meta, it's probably just not good to play this deck in the current meta. But when you don't have to tech it out very much and you can just build it as straightforward as possible, that's when it's like the deck is good to play in the meta. So yeah, I really like the take from Hedrick as well, with just, you know, straightforward setup. The deck's powerful enough, if we can just set up, the deck will be able to do the rest, right?
Yeah. And it can be worth, like, to have some options that, like, cover multiple things, right? Like, something in Jesse's
list.
It's
got to be, like...
the Lost Vacuum, right? Like, kind of a tech, but, like, it probably hits a few different things for you, right? Like, Hero's Cape and random things, Ancient Booster Capsule. That's got to be what that's...
Yeah, I mean, the answer to that is, like, it does that, but it's just also just, like, a dead card. Even in those situations, sometimes it's just a dead card. Right.
Sure.
You have to find it to use it. But
that's why you got the ear.
It's different in decks like Charizard, where you have so much access to all these cards when you need them on the specific situations. Like this deck is, you have so much less access to things when you want it, to getting it when you want it, you know? So, I like the more straightforward approach, I think, for sure. And we did see it was the more successful of the builds. With Hedrick winning, of course, and then Davidson being the next highest Dialga finisher. But it was close. It was literally Michael Davidson at 26, Jesse Parker at 27. But is that the consistency difference? That could be it, right? One place, right there.
Definitely could be.
But like you were saying, yeah, lack of Charizard. One of our predictions that we had was, how many Charizard would we see in top 32? I predicted, like, what were our predictions? 9 for me, 8 for you, and it was 3.
Yeah.
It was 3. And I don't know if you look at the rest of, like, past the very, but I guess, like, there's like, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's 7 Chi and Paos in the top 16. Oh, that's a lot. That's almost half. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's a lot. And that's going to be a lot of the reason that there's so few Chi. That's a lot of the reason there's going to be so few Charizards in top 32, right? Because they're just taking all these losses to the Chi and Paos, which is favorable matchup. We didn't see one Charizard was able to get in there into the top 8. Or 2 in the top 16, I guess Michael Bergerac as well there in the top 16. But Ian was able to get a top 8 here and did choose, I guess, like the one thing to stand out there for Ian's build with the Charizard. Just did play the maximum belt, which we haven't seen be successful in a little while in Charizard.
Yeah, he actually said in his interview he chose to play it because he knew none of the other Charizards were going to be playing it. And he felt like it was a really good option for the mirror match.
Yeah, and also good against Champao. Probably the...
Yeah.
I think it's close between that and Prime Catcher. Actually, Cape is good against it, too.
Yeah, Maximum Model one of the main the draws of playing Pao. Cape is the Chi and Pao matchup, is it not?
I mean, it feels like it, but I generally feel like if you, like, being more, having the option to be aggressive is generally having better than having, like, another passive option, I guess, you know? Probably. Like, Charizard is already so passive in that matchup to begin with, where it's like you always almost give Chi and Pao the lead. So being able to, like, kind of flip the script on him probably makes it the best of the 3 A specs to play, I would assume. Right? Maybe not.
No, I track with that, yeah.
That would be my guess. I've kind of gone back and forth thinking. I haven't like it would nice. It'd be nice to like sit down and play 10 games of Charizard with each aspect against Chien Pao.
Well, you're doing nothing this week. Pokemon.
I've been grinding Hearthstone Battlegrounds chip. I'm climbing, making moves.
I'm busy.
I'm busy. This is my vacation. It's my Battlegrounds vacation before I go to Sweden to lock back in for some Poke action. I guess like the other, I mean, there was Grant in top eight with the control, of course. But let's talk about, I guess you could talk about the lost boxes. There's not only Dean, who got third in the top four with a cool lost box build, but there's two others in top 16 as well. Leonardo Fernandez and Jackson Ford. I haven't even looked at these yet, so I don't know how different they actually are.
Yeah, Dean's list seems pretty good, honestly. It's only a couple cards different from Nico Galá's list, which I guess all of these really are pretty similar overall. The big thing is that Dean did not play the Mew EX that everyone else played.
No Mew, no Countercatcher, no Palpat or things that stand out to me. Artisan over Pokestop.
Most people are just playing Artisan as well, which is pretty interesting.
I feel like Pokestop seems super powerful, especially with four Super Rod. But yeah, everyone's been on another deck that I don't have that much experience with in the current format, to be honest. Even with four Super Rod and four Nest Ball, I feel like it just kind of makes sense to run Pokestop. But I think if you play Pokestop, you also need to include Palpad. So that becomes like another thing you have to play. So yeah, I'm not too sure, to be honest. Also, Four Buddy Poffin, actually. I don't think I've seen Four Buddy Poffin yet. So just trying to find Pokemon.
Yeah, I mean, the Four Buddy Poffin almost makes the Artisan feel worse to me, though.
Well, the Artisan is there to find Cram and Sableye. Sure. But that's like...
You got four Nest Ball, too.
Actually, I kind of agree with you. It does make it feel worse. It looks worse. Like, it makes me think maybe Pokestop would be a little bit better. But once again, if you play Pokestop, I feel like you have to play Palpad, right? So
I will say as like well... I actually feel like this deck has a pretty good Chien Pao matchup. Now, Dean did lose in top four to Grant Shin, but I didn't watch it at the tournament. I wasn't casting it. I was watching the other top four match that was happening out on the floor. But I went back today and watched the top four match. And I will say, I think Dean definitely could have played quite a bit better in top four. Definitely had some stakes in there that led to him, I think, losing the game, where, like, honestly, in both of the games, he probably should have just won.
Yeah, Dean definitely did not play great, not gonna lie, but I know he wants to do better, and he's gonna, you know, take that and then, you know, push it forward to his next tournament and try and, you know, improve on that. I know he's not pleased with his play, and he's definitely gonna, you know, hopefully.
I wonder how this does against Dialga. That would be the question I would have.
That's what I was just going to say as well. I have actually no... I mean, the Hoopa could... I guess you just go after the little guys, right? With Sableye, Cram, and Greninja to begin with. Like, you do the same thing that Chien Pao does. Like, you go first, turn two Ninja, KO the Schmeldums, and then maybe Sableye gets involved to trap the Schmeldums. And then you get Sableye involved to trap some Schmeldums later. And then, like, Roaring Moon. You do have ways to one-hit KO Dialgas, right? Roaring Moon, maybe the Hoopa if they put too much energy in play. Hands can get two prize cards on a Ninja. So I feel like it's probably a close matchup, because of course they have Ionos plus the possibility of the Chrono Star to really get pulled super far ahead or close out games as well with those kind of plays. But that'd be an interesting one for sure. I think Lost Box is definitely probably a little bit slept on right now, because I mean, yeah, it's just one of those things where it hasn't had, I don't know, sometimes like need a dub, but it's also one of the harder decks to play in the format as well. So people aren't as likely to want to like pick it up and try it out as well with that in mind as well, right? So yeah, I think it's good though. I think it's good. And there's a bunch of different ways to play it right now. We talked about this build seems to be like the standard way to play it right now, I guess, moving forward. But we talked about like a couple differences between this and like Galaz's list, that Galaz got second place in Sao Paulo. I scrolled down and now I'm looking at the list here from Leonardo Fernandez, which is actually the same 60 as Jackson Ford. I don't know if they
it might be a coincidence.
Is it Leandro or Leonardo?
Leandro.
Leandro, yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, it actually might just be a coincidence there. these both lists are very close, I believe, to what Galaz played.
I think Galaz just had two Artisan, no Pokestop.
Yeah, is that, as I was going to say, is that the only difference there? Oh, no counter catcher. Galaz did not play the counter catcher.
Counter catcher does seem really good
Lost deck. Yeah, Lost Box is still very much kicking, very much alive. I think Charizard still not respecting it. Like Jirachi, I don't know, we can even look at the, take a look at the cards here. Jirachi,
a lot of the good players did have Jirachi in their lists this weekend.
Yeah, people usually still at least have Mist if they don't have Jirachi. It feels like most of the time, it's usually one or the other. But yeah, people not like, it's not like everyone's playing Jirachi like they used to in Charizard, right, for Lost Zone deck. So yeah, you're still getting those really, the potential for those really strong Sableye turns in the matchup, which is still really, really good for Lost Box. So I don't think anyone's like that worried about Lost Box right now. And I think people are going to become less worried about Lost Tina moving forward with how dominant Qian Pao and Dialga, to be honest, like, I guess not dominant, but like how successful Dialga was. Dialga and Qian Pao both have pretty good team matchups. So I don't think
Dialga is definitely going to be something to consider moving forward, right? Like that, it's going to be much more widely played now.
Yeah, honestly, I could see it being like the third or fourth most popular deck as soon as, probably not as soon as stock, but maybe. We saw
definitely with Maridon
after LAIC. Yeah, definitely by LA would be like in the top four most popular. I wouldn't be surprised though, because really cool deck. Not like the sequencing with Matang is really weird, but once you understand it, it's not that complicated. But it is way different than any other Pokemon deck I've ever played. The sequencing with Matang is actually really interesting. So that's pretty cool. But it's not like too difficult to make you not want to pick it up. But there is some nuance to it for sure.
Definitely.
Speaking of the lack of success of Charizard at Indianapolis, unless there's anything else you want to mention about it, there was a special event in Buenos Aires where Charizard did its thing. Three in the top four, won the whole tournament. Nothing too shocking, I guess, with that, though, to be honest.
Yeah, four in the top eight as well. Yeah, I mean, a lot of Charizard out here down in Argentina. And, you know, surprise did beat Ancient Box in the finals. Definitely a tough matchup for the Ancient Box, right? But I will say, this player did get through at least one Charizard, right? Because they had to have beaten one in top four.
Yeah, probably had to beat one, maybe two in Swiss, because it's just hard to get through Swiss without without hitting one of them. And actually, we can look at the results for this list. They played the exact same 60 in Sao Paulo. So running it back to back here at events, not as good of a placement in Sao Paulo, but did get second here at the special event. And yeah, I don't know. Ancient Box is still like, all right, it's all right. Nothing too crazy in this list either. This is pretty standard. This is almost like the exact same city as
Ewart.
Actually, what is the difference? Yeah, from
the fire Jake. Energy.
Oh, no fire. Thank goodness.
I think that is the only difference. Yeah.
Yeah, Noivern is not to be feared.
I honestly would probably play seven dark feared, one fighting before I played the second fighting in this deck. You just
It lets you attack with Great Tusk. Dude, that's like this, the only thing.
Yeah, sure. But like, are we gonna Sada attach? Sada attach? Like,
I mean, if they knocking it out, why not? We're swinging.
We Let's usually got a Sada attached to the thing we're attacking with that turn. That's true. Mean if we're just land collapsing, you mean?
Yeah. If we land collapse and they don't respect it for a turn, we're 160 next turn. We're coming through. Look out. And that was actually like the build that Christian Fontenot and someone else played. It was like a four Great Tusk, like one Koridon build.
I've been playing a list on TCG Live that has no Koridon and just Great Tusk and like two double turbo energies as well. You just start this guy, you just start milling. They got to knock it out or you can just keep doing that. Wait, so
you've literally been playing the deck, but now you're disrespecting the double fighting energy? What the heck?
Well, yeah, I'm not attacking. I don't play fighting energy in mine. I just play two double turbos.
That sounds worse than two fighting energy. What are you doing here?
I want a Hex Hurl on turn two as well, buddy.
Oh, of course. Yeah, got him with the Hex Hurl.
Bro, that's one Hex Hurl 70-70 or 70-20. Knock out some Comfeys. Come on now.
Okay, all right. I respect it. That is true. You get the Hex Hurl on him. Chip leaking the sauce out here? Leak to us first, Chip. What the heck? You gotta leak to the squad first.
Buddy, I didn't know it's been in the Discord for like 3 weeks. So shows everyone what you check, you know.
Dude, I'm busy grinding Battlegrounds, bro.
Oh my gosh.
Summer party shit.
Holy cow, this guy.
Yeah, nothing else too crazy in Buenos Aires. The future hands did kind of squeak into top eight. And I'm not too worried about that. One thing, I guess, another thing to maybe mention, like, we see the Guardi here in top eight here in Buenos Aires. That was a deck that I feel like had been building up hype that didn't really do very well. The highest placing one was 22nd at Indianapolis. And, I mean, it kind of makes sense. I don't think you have your Chien Pao matchup is tough. And, yeah, your Chien Pao matchup's tough. Maybe it's kind of like, was that also like Lost Box can be an iffy matchup depending on how fast you get to 7 and 10.
I also don't know how good, like, your Charizard matchup's not that good, I don't think.
It's fine. I think it's like 50-50 probably. Before the tournament, Josh Frink, who's been one of the most successful, if not the most successful Guardi player so far with the top four at Orlando, said that his list, 65-35 Charizard. So, and I know, I'm pretty sure Josh was in day two for sure, but.
Yeah, but guess what Josh was playing?
Gardevoir? Arctina. What? Why would you go from a deck that's 65-35 Charizard to a deck that is slightly unfavored to Charizard? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, what are we doing here? Double Iron Leaves. Double Iron Leaves.
Yeah, you're still losing. I'm back to Arctina being a fraud deck, by the way. I've gone back and forth on this. Before the format even came out, I was like, ooh, Arctina looks sick. And then I was like, this deck stinks. And now I was kind of come back in around to like, ooh, maybe it's pretty good. I'm back on the Arctina is a terrible deck. It's gotten way worse now because the Chien Pao matchup and the Dialga matchup aren't great. Now it's definitely
the Dialga matchup is abysmal. This deck has no way to beat Dialga.
You can't win. Now it's like completely back in the binder. Yeah, I was super wishy-washy back and forth on Arctina, but now I'm just 100% on. The deck is terrible. Lock it up. Put it away. Worry about it another day.
It just shows we didn't even talk about the meta.
There's not too much to talk about because we were just kind of right. Right?
Yeah, well, Arctina was up there, man. Arctina was the third most popular deck in day two.
In day two.
What about day Arctina. One? Though? In day one, it was the fourth most popular deck.
It's 7%. That's nothing.
Well, sure.
I actually almost perfectly, like, I'm going to go ahead and pat myself. Like, I almost perfectly
all you do is pat yourself on the back. One. It is honestly ridiculous.
I was the only thing I was off on by was Chien Pao. I predicted Chien Pao at 10. It was 12. But I was like, Zard 25, Chien Pao 10, Lost Tina 7, Arctina 6 to 7, Ancient Box 5, Lugia 5. I don't know where it goes after that, but I was like almost perfect with my prediction. It's not that hard when Zard's taking up 25% of the meta, of course, but you know, it was pretty close.
Well, let's recap. Let's recap our predictions here from this past week. We already talked about how we predicted how many Zard would be in the top 32. Azul said 9. I said 8. The answer was 3. Nothing to add. All right. And then our next prediction was how many players with 36 match points would miss top 8? I'm going to double check, but I'm pretty sure.
One.
The answer was 1. You said 0. I said 2. So we'll split the difference there. Yeah.
Whatever that means. Sure.
There were some like natural ties, I think. There was like some weird stuff that happened in the last round, if I'm remembering right. Like,
there was the potential for
there's there potential be, like, for like three 11
36 bubbles.
Yeah,
there's a potential for like 3 or 4 36 bubbles, which is pretty crazy. Tournaments are getting pretty big.
Like Reagan Retzlav lost his last round or tied his last round to Frank Diaz.
Yeah, tied.
But if he had won, he would have been at 36.
And then John tied. John Eng tied. Ended up at 35, but would have been at 37. John or his opponent would have been at 37. And that would have bumped another 36 out of cut.
Lucas Zing ID'd with Andrew Mahone and then unfortunately missed out.
Yeah, and that was like a fair idea. I think I remember looking at the resistances. I think Lucas's ID was okay. You do like this is almost becoming like more important to make sure you're on top of that kind of stuff now these days, though, to be honest, like with your IDs at the end of rounds and stuff. Like I think even potentially like trying to, this is something like me and my group should probably do, is like put together like the average opponent's win percentages and just trying to figure out like what actually seems reasonably safe from like round to round and like the margin of error and stuff like that.
At the end of round 14, Lucas's was the worst of all the 35s. So
all right, he probably shouldn't have that. It's so hard to calculate that in the moment and like understand, but yeah, if yours is the worst, you probably shouldn't.
Well, he and Mahone were tied for the worst, I guess, but he was losing on opponents.
So he was tied. You want to put it more. You just want to put it on your gameplay. You want to be like, I'm going to play well, and that's what I want to be the difference maker, not relying on my opponents winning more rounds than my opponents or whatever. Yeah. So even if you lose in that situation, it could feel bad, but like, I mean, that's what you want to put your success on and your failures on, is just your play as much as possible. Like that should be the difference maker, or you want that to be the difference maker, I guess. I don't know.
And our final prediction, we kind of got bodied on this one, Azul.
What was it?
It was how many counter catcher would there be in top eight?
Oof.
Yeah.
Sheesh.
I said 10. You said 9. The answer was...
Grant got us a 3.
Yeah, and Ian played 2. The answer was 5.
All right. I mean, Chi and Pao just all cut it, and then they did pretty well this tournament. I mean, what are you going to do, you know?
We got farmed, buddy. Well, there is... Too much Pao, man. Too much Pao. There is the Stockholm Regionals this weekend. I know you're going.
The medal will be about the same.
A lot. You're going. Yeah. A lot of Americans are going. It's going to be overall a pretty small tournament. I think there is still registration space. And I think the cap was like 800. So it's not going to be super big, but it is a regionals. Nope. So first place still gets 10K. That's pretty sweet.
It's currently at 937. So it's probably closing in on capped, but I'm not there yet.
Sure. I guess one question for anyone going to Stockholm, like you're going to Stockholm, right? How are you and your testing group approaching the success of Dialga when it comes to decision making for deck build, for deck selection?
A little bit. It'll be more popular for sure moving forward. It'll probably like double in popularity from where we are to Stockholm for sure. And that's not a whole ton, but it'll probably like triple, quadruple going into like LA. So it'll be more popular. It'll be more successful on average. It might not win, of course. So it's definitely a deck like you want to look out for. I think it's like a deck. And also, like, if it is that good in the meta, as it seems like it might be, especially based on what, like, to be like one of, like, the best player who is playing the deck right now, Hedrick. I think he's definitely like the best player who's playing the deck. It's not really a question of that. If it's as good as he thinks it is, then there's definitely like, okay, this deck is like real for sure. So even if it's not like super, super popular, like if it's like a 7% deck, maybe 6, the expected success of the deck would probably be pretty high. So it's definitely a deck worth like not worrying about, but like you want it to be on your list of decks where it's like, all right, I want to be able to contest against Charizard, Chi and Pao. Dialga probably makes the list now for sure. Even though it just like, just had its moment.
If you're someone who wants to play the best deck in the format going into a tournament, are you for Stockholm going to play Charizard, or are you going to play Chiang Pao after seeing its success this weekend?
I'd probably still just say Charizard, because like, I mean, it's like, even, and maybe like, there's so many, you can just like tech Charizard for every match. So like a Charizard, you could just like play the maximum belt and the Eerie for the Chi and Pao matchup. But if like decks, if people adjust their deck choice and techs around Chi and Pao, you're just kind of screwed if you roll up with Chi and Pao, right? Or more screwed. You could still be fine and still make top eight. You can still win the tournament with Chi and Pao for sure, even if people adjust around it, but it's going to be tougher, where it's like, it doesn't ever get tougher for Charizard. Cause like it, we're like at almost maximum toughness for Charizard, right? Because everyone is accounting for it and teching for it. Like, yeah. So I don't think I would, if I'm picking between Chi and Pao and Charizard, I think I'd just go with Charizard.
All right, well,
we're at maximum difficulty.
I guess the only other thing would be, you know, after your group did well with control, you know, does that open up the door for like control to be more played in this format? Do you think like it should be more played than it is?
I don't know about more played. It's just one of those decks that's not going to be super played. It's still good.
Yeah.
The Dialga matchup's tough, but like I said, all out Blitzel already found a solution. Shout out to Blitzel. And the Chi and Pao matchup is also kind of tough as well. And then a lot of the fringe matchup, like the Arctina is tough, the Lugia is tough. So I don't think it needs to be, it shouldn't be more played than it is, but it definitely is a good deck. And if you're one of the people who's kind of like really loves playing control decks and you're on the fence about it and you're not like, what do I even want to say? Like, you're just kind of like, I just want to play a deck and have fun with it, but I don't want to like show up with control and just get bodied. Control's in a good enough spot where like, if it's your style of deck, then rolling up with it would be reasonable for sure. But it's not like head and shoulders above everything else. It's just like super hard to play. That's why it doesn't have success. The deck is just like a good deck.
All right, well, let's do some predictions for Stockholm this weekend. Let's keep with the theme of what we've been doing in this format. Azul, how many Charizard are there going to be in top 32?
This is a tough one now, because like definitely, I feel like this comes up now and then where like decks will have their rebound. Like I feel like Charizard underperformed this tournament, even despite like what was being chose to be played at the tournament, especially by specifically top players. I think it did definitely underperformed for how popular it was, like 25% and then only 3 in top 32. That feels a little weak. So it definitely needs to be a little bit higher than that. I'm going to go with 6.
Be a little bit more conservative this time around. I was thinking in my head.
All right.
Right there next to each other.
All right. Well, it did just win, but we'll be able to repeat the success. And how much success we'll be able to repeat? How many Dialga in top 8, Chip?
Yeah, I mean, I think Dialga is definitely good, but it's a pretty quick little turnaround. It's not going to be that big of a tournament as well. There's a chance it's only 14 rounds, right? Not 15 rounds.
Yeah, I think it's a guaranteed. Oh,
no, no, it's 799. Was the cap
800? Oh, okay, yeah, it's a guaranteed it won't be. It's going to guarantee be 5 rounds, yeah.
Unless they added some space for some reason.
I don't think so.
But yeah, I don't know how much that does or doesn't play into the factor of it, I guess. I'm going to go with 1. I think 1 still gets in there. I don't think Hedrick's going to Stockholm, but I think one player will sneak in there, maybe with something very similar to his list.
Yeah, I think I'm also gonna go with 1. I think 1's a good for how much there's gonna be, but how powerful of a deck we can kind of analyze it being. Yeah, 1. Well, I'm going with 1 as well. I think actually like a big thing for the deck I was gonna mention. I think there's been a bunch of different ways that people can play it. The Jack build, the Arvin builds.
Yeah.
But now I think it's kind of becoming standardized. We've figured out the best way to play Dialga, or the maybe it's not actually the best, but the way that people will be playing it moving forward. So it's like less of, sometimes like decks are in like a testing phase as you're playing it in the tournament, but now Dialga's kind of been figured out a little bit more for the general player base to kind of work off of as well. I'll mention that as well. Things are going to become more standardized for it moving forward.
Definitely. And then our last prediction, you know, this event is in Europe, but there's going to be people from all over coming to play in it. Also, Europe has tons of countries within itself, right? So our question here is, what country will the winner be from?
That's a good question. I mean, I do plan on showing up, so I'm going to go with America, USA, baby. That's a dub. I knew this is where
the answer was going to go for you.
Are you gonna go with a European country? And then at that point, which one do you even go with?
Yeah, I'm gonna go with the Netherlands.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because I'm assuming the Cameron brothers are gonna be there, and Owen's that's been on a tear.
Is that where like I didn't know that's where they were from, but I was going to say, are the cameramen's from the Netherlands?
yeah.
Yo, Brennan's got to get the dub at this point, right? Like,
we're waiting for Brennan to get a dub now. that's what my prediction was going to be as well. Because if you see our, you know, the stream graphic that they put up there with all the regional champions on it, the bottom graphic has four tournaments on it, and two of them are already occupied by Owen. It's the same picture right next to each other. It's pretty hilarious. But then the next two are just blanked out, waiting for the next champion. So my prediction is that Brennan Cameraman wins in Stockholm, and then also gets the win in that last event of the season as well. So it's Cameraman. That's the prediction right there.
That would be a crazy, timeline there, Chip. We'll see if Brennan's up to it. I'm gonna do my best to,
I believe, prevent Brennan. It
this weekend. But that would also be pretty sick storyline if it did happen. So if I don't get the dub, I wouldn't be mad for that to be the outcome, to be honest. But I think it's gonna do it for us this week, Chip. It was a fun podcast. I'm a little tired, trying to keep up the best I can, but why don't you go ahead and close us out?
Yeah, thanks so much to everyone for listening and for the support. As always, if you do want to show that little bit of extra support, the best way to do it is to leave us a like, a rating, a review, comment, subscribe, all those good, you know, classic content creator things that people say. Yeah, helps us out a ton, helps more people discover us, and shows your support for what we're doing over here. And if you want to keep up to date with what we're doing, the best place to do that is over on Twitter. You can follow myself at Chip Ritchie, Azul at Azul_GG. And you can also follow the podcast at Uncommon_Energy.
Yeah, I somehow lost you there for a bit, Chip. But it sounds like I came back just in time to say thanks for the support as always. Good luck to everyone in Sweden this weekend. There's no other major tournaments going on this weekend. We didn't miss any, right? I don't think so.
There are a bunch of Latin America special events coming up.
There are. Yeah, there are. Catch everyone next Wednesday, 7 a.m. Eastern. See you.